Born of the blood of gods, Anchises' son, man of Troy, the Sibyl of Apollo tells Aeneas, the descent into the underworld is easy. Night and day, the gates of shadowy death stand wide open, but to retrace your steps, to climb back to the upper air, there the struggle, there the labor lies. This is Dr. Jim Tomkiewicz, and this is the After Dinner Scholar Podcast from Wyoming Catholic College. Aeneas fled Troy, leading his young son and carrying his aged father as the Greek armies looted the city, burning it to the ground. He wandered 7 years across the Mediterranean with his men. After staying too long in Dido's Carthage and burying his father, Aeneas finally made landfall in Italy. As he stepped out onto the beach, he finally arrived in the land of his destiny. There he would conquer. There he would establish the Trojans. There he would found the kingdom that would become Rome. But before setting out to conquer, Aeneas tells the Sibyl, since here, they say, are the gates of death's king and the dark marsh where the Acheron comes flooding up, please allow me to go and see my beloved father, meet him face to face. Dr. Adam Cooper has been reading Virgil's Aeneid with our Wyoming Catholic College sophomores, guiding them as the Sibyl guided Aeneas into the underworld. Why did Aeneas, now that he's finally gotten to Italy, why did Aeneas feel the need to journey among the dead?
Aeneas's journey to the underworld is right in the very middle of his story, right in the middle of the poem. And the first half of the poem, something like an education of the hero to be a Roman and to accept his Roman mission. And readers of the Aeneid will remember that the first half of the poem is taken up by a whole series of wanderings, errors, and false starts, the greatest of which is his falling into an affair with the beautiful Dido. So Aeneas begins the poem as a kind of unwilling hero. When Troy is in flames and the city that represents the whole world that he knows is being destroyed, all he wants is to die with Troy. To go down with Troy, and he has to be redirected again and again to look to a wider horizon in which the gods and values for which he is supposed to fight are somehow beyond the walls of Troy, beyond transcendent, beyond the limits of any particular human culture. It's very difficult to give yourself for a mission, for a city that you've never seen, you've never known, the city of Rome. It's very difficult to commit yourself to purposes that you've never lived in an embodied way, that you've don't belong to your household, don't belong to the city that you love. And in fact, when Aeneas is in the flames of Troy and wants to die there, Venus persuades him to look beyond Troy in a very strange way. It says that she clears the darkness, the mist from before his eyes, and he can see that the gods have not exactly abandoned Troy, nor are the gods tied to Troy. In fact, they're dismantling it. And this is supposed to enable him to move forward. Seems like a very cold kind of comfort from Mother Venus, but what he's being asked to see is that he's called to something transcendent and that the gods have a plan that's larger than his own imagination. So going from the fall of Troy, Aeneas is initially an unwilling hero. And as he wanders from place to place trying to create a new city, he's tempted again and again to just remake Troy. There's a city built by Andromache, the wife of Hector, Troy's great hero, that's only just a little miniature Troy. And there's an empty tomb where Hector is not buried that she goes to pray at every day. And there's two altars to her tears where she weeps over what is past, and a miniature little Trojan river and a miniature Trojan gate. And Aeneas's heart would be at home in this place, and he would like to stop here, or in Carthage, where he would be happy to forget about his public responsibility and the future of his people and find comfort in the arms of Dido. So again and again, in the early part of the book, you can see how the man, Aeneas, is the first impulses of his heart, and all his instincts pull against the arms of the Roman mission that the gods are asking him to take on. In the underworld, Aeneas' education is completed, and the man is given a vision of what can reconcile his heart to his mission. So Aeneas is constantly caught between the past that he knows and loves and the future that he's meant to give himself for, the unseen future of the Roman project. He's caught between the movements of his heart and his duty. In the underworld, he sees his past, both the past that he loves, and he sees Dido.
He sees Priam.
Sees also his father. And it's really his love of his father, the man that he rescued, carried on his back, who sort of represents his past in a sense, that draws him personally down there, even though he knows also that it's necessary for his mission, for some reason, to go down into the world of death and look at his own personal reality and the reality of the world from the perspective of final things. But it's really his desire for reunion with the father he's lost that draws him down.
Well, is it a kind of a death and resurrection? You know, this old life of the Trojan wandering, yearning for Troy, dead, and then a resurrection to the new improved Aeneas who's going to conquer Italy?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It seems like the hero goes to the underworld because the hero is ultimately called to give his life for something greater than himself. And so he goes to look at at life from the perspective of that death. And if that's the case, then he's enabled to see that the value of everything he loves, everything his heart is drawn to, is somehow protected and affirmed by the mission for which he has to give himself. And so it's not accidental that Aeneas sees not only his past failures and his past loves in the underworld, but also sees his future, the future, in fact, in the deepest region of the underworld, Elysium, the fields of the blessed, are not only the souls that have prevailed heroically in life, but also souls that are waiting to go forth into the world of life. And here Aeneas sees not his ancestors, not his past, but his descendants, his future, the future that his his heroism will lay the ground for. Most poignantly of all, this future is introduced to him by his father, the beloved past. And it's Anchises who's full of enthusiasm to see Julius Caesar and Augustus and Junius Brutus and Marcellus and all these bright stars that will be Aeneas' descendants.
Well, it seems to me that it's wonderful that Virgil's sponsor for this project shows up. It's like,
right.
Here is Caesar and all the line of Julius soon to venture under the sky's great arch. Here is the man. He's here. Time and again, you've heard of his coming, his promised. Augustus Caesar, son of a god. He will bring back the age of gold to Latian fields where Saturn once held sway, expanding his empire past the Gargamans and the Indians to a land beyond the stars, beyond the wheel of the year, the course of the sun itself where Atlas bears the skies and turns on his shoulder the heavens studded with flaming stars. Oh my goodness. Who wouldn't want to be part of that?
Yeah, yeah. It's very much belongs to the hero, any hero, to give himself for the bringing forth of something glorious and to set that end above his own natural desires, inclinations. Even in the Iliad, when Odysseus arouses the heroic spirit in the Achaean troops, it says, then battle became sweeter to them than to go home with their wives and their children, because they're going to achieve something great whose glory will perish. Never, says Odysseus. For Aeneas, the family man, Aeneas, the team player, Aeneas, who even in the Iliad is not the shining star, not the Hector of the Trojans, this glory is not so much his glory. He's not going to be the shining star, but a kind of field of stars, a collective communal project in which many, many different excellent figures will shine out and struggling with each other, cooperating with each other, will bring about something great for the world, the Roman order. The gods aren't calling him to cease to be a family man, or to cease to be a man who loves his home, or to cease to have the kind of affections and affinities that draw him towards a Dido, but they are calling him to let those affections, passions, inclinations pass through a kind of death where he can see his own good, identify his own good with the good of a whole people that will call him father.
What do our students think of all this?
Our students here at WCC find Aeneas actually in many ways an easier hero to relate to than Odysseus or Achilles, both of whom Achilles so focused on his individual glory. Odysseus also interested in his individual glory and willing to perform all kinds of tricks and lies and deceptions in order to attain what is the happiness and order of his household, but really is his own happiness, his own recovering, his own being. I am Odysseus of Ithaca. I can't be who I am unless I am in relation to Penelope, Telemachus, and so forth. So the Greek epic heroes are pursuing their own good. Aeneas gives us something that prefigures the Christian life, in that he's not following the deep impulse of his spirit to return home or to shine forth unforgettably the way Achilles does, but rather he's a man with a calling, a man who's called by powers above and beyond him. And the intensity of whose calling actually speaks to him most loudly in moments where he's evading it or drawing away. He's burdened by a mission. And in the underworld, his soul consents to it and is willing to believe, willing to see that his own, both to subordinate his own personal happiness to it, but also to see that what is most meaningful about his life is actually affirmed by answering this high calling rather than simply discarded or thrown away.
While the story of Aeneas' journey into the underworld is fascinating in its own right, what most of our sophomores don't know yet is the way Dante uses Virgil's description of the underworld and of the dead in the Inferno. And while the Sibyl warns Aeneas about going through the gates into deep hell, Dante's journey leads him into deepest hell's deepest depths. Fascinating. If you've not read the Aeneid, and if you've not read the comedy, let me encourage you to take up and read. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tomkiewicz.